Out of all of those, please tell me which one is right which one is the right path to follow, and secondly, where did all these paths come from? Why do we have so many paths in the world today? Two very important questions which Uddhava asked so that we could know about this. So Krishna says, Kalena nashta pralaye vani amveda sangita mayadau brahmane prokam dharmo yasyam madatmaka. He says, Uddhava, in the beginning I produced the Vedas. When did he produce the Vedas for the first time? There never was a first time. Ved is also anadi. It means Ved was never made or created. It's an eternal divine power, an eternal part of Krishna. Whenever there's a srishti, he has to reproduce Vedas in the world. So he says, Kalena nashta pralaye. During pralaya, when there's a break here on the earth planet, a break in civilization, a break in life on this earth planet, after that, when life is being reestablished, when civilization is being reestablished by the first saints of the earth planet, so before that even happens, maya dao brahmane prokta, I give the knowledge of the Vedas to Brahma, Krishna's telling Uddhava. And Brahma gives that knowledge of the Vedas to the first saints of the earth planet, we call Rishis, and they produce that knowledge, eventually they produce it in a written form for ordinary souls like us. But Krishna says, what is in the Ved? Dharma is in the Ved. Dharmo yasyam madatmaka. In the Vedas, I reveal what is dharma. And what is dharma, he says, very simply. He says, yasyam madatmaka. That through which a soul can come to me, that is dharma. A very simple explanation of dharma by Krishna. Whatever brings a soul to him is dharma, and that's what he revealed in the Vedas. That and nothing else. So why is Krishna the goal? Why is attaining God the goal? In fact, he's saying the only goal of the Vedas. What do we want? Here's an interesting question. What do we want? What is our goal? It means the same thing. What do we want? So if we even took a poll in this room, we might come up with hundreds of different answers or even thousands, because each of us wants many things. And if we went around the whole town and asked different people, we would probably have millions or billions of answers to this one question, what do you want? Someone may want money, someone may want love, someone may want fame, someone may want popularity. There are many different things we seek, but actually, if you go to the root of all of those desires, they all lead to the same place. They all lead back to the same place. Sarveshayam api sarvesham. In the Bhagavatam, it is told that every soul desires only one thing. Sarvesham api bhutanam nripasvatmaiva vallabha itare patya vittadhyas tadvallabhatayaivahi. Whatever anyone wants, it's all for the same reason, happiness. Why does someone want money? Because they think money will make them happy. Why does someone want a promotion? There could be many reasons, but whichever reasons he gives, it will all lead back to happiness. I want a promotion because then I'll get more respect. Okay, why do you want more respect? Because that will make me happy. There's only one desire, the desire for happiness. Whatever anyone is doing in this world is all only for one thing and one thing only. Only to find happiness. Therefore, we all have only one goal. Our singular goal is to find perfect happiness. Now, in this world, have we not found happiness? Let's look at that. Does finding happiness have anything to do with finding God? Because Krishna said, dharma is whatever brings you to me, and that's the only thing I told you in the Vedas, how to come to me, because that is your ultimate goal. In this world, there are actually 11 different levels of happiness. Saisha nandasya mimansa bhavati. Yuva syat sadhu yuva dhyayakah ashishtho dradhishtho balishtho tasyayam prithvi sarva vittasya purna syat sa ek manush anandah. This is from Taittiriya Upanishad, defining what is one unit of worldly happiness. One unit of worldly happiness is equal to this. If someone could be the ruler of the entire earth planet, means one king or queen ruling the whole earth, everybody favorable towards them, having a nice family, nice children, nice spouse, everybody loves them and supports them, they're young, handsome, or beautiful, strong, healthy, knowledgeable, generous, honest. They have all the good qualities and everything in this world that anyone could ever desire. If someone could ever have all of that, that is considered one unit of worldly happiness. Te shatam manusha anandah sa eka manushya gandharvana manandah. Multiply that by hundreds of times. Te ye shatam. Multiply that by hundreds of times, and you have the happiness or the pleasure of the lowest celestial abode called Swarg. That one is called Manushya Gandharva Lok. In Manushya Gandharva Lok, which you could say is like the slum of the celestial abodes. Like here in this world, we have the slums, and then we have the five-star hotels, and we have everything in between. So in Swarg, the slums, the pleasures in the slum abodes, which is Manushya Gandharva Lok, that's hundreds of times better than the greatest pleasure of this earth planet. Multiply the pleasure of Manushya Gandharva Lok by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Deva Gandharva Lok. Multiply that pleasure by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Pitri Deva Lok. Multiply that pleasure by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Ajanaj Deva Lok. This is all Swarg, higher and higher levels of Swarg. Multiply that by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Karma Deva Lok. Multiply that by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Nitya Deva Lok. Multiply that by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Indra Lok, Indra's abode. But there's more beyond that. Multiply the pleasure of Indra's abode by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Brihaspati Lok. Multiply that pleasure by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Prajapati Lok. But there's one more beyond that, Brahma's abode. Multiply the pleasure of Prajapati Lok by hundreds of times, and you have the pleasure of Satya Lok, Brahma's abode. But A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartinorjuna Maam Petya Tu Kaunteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. Krishna says in the Gita that all the way up to Brahma's abode is within Maya. So it's all revertible. Anyone who goes even up to Brahma's abode, he only gets a temporary residency there. Eventually he has to come back. Like if I go to India, I go on a 6-month visitor's visa. After that, I have to leave the country. So you get a temporary residence in Swarga based on the limit of your good actions that you performed in order to go there. Then you have to come back. Now, what is the pleasure like over there? We can't really imagine. We can't even imagine what is 100 times the greatest pleasure of this world, let alone multiplying by billions and billions of times like you would to get all the way to Brahma's abode. Yet, all the way, see, this world plus those 10 levels of swara, is any of that considered true happiness? Our Vedas tell us this also, that to be considered true happiness, it must meet 3 criteria. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham. Chandogya Upanishad says that it is only true happiness if it is unlimited in amount. Remember I said 1 unit of worldly happiness was equal to that king who ruled the whole earth planet. Multiply that by billions and billions of times, we get up to the pleasure of Brahma's abode. But is that unlimited? No, it's still a limited number. It might have a lot of zeros after it, but it's still limited, not unlimited. So it's not real happiness, according to the Vedas. If it's limited, you can still desire for more. Indro vanchati brahma padam. Imagine in Indra's abode, how many millions of times more pleasure are you experiencing than here? Yet, even Indra desires for the pleasure of Brahma's abode. And even if someone goes to Brahma's abode, they're still going to desire for more pleasure also, because it's still limited. Number one. And number two, it doesn't last forever. Real happiness has to last forever. So it should be of unlimited amount, and it should be permanent. Once you get it, it can never be taken from you. It can never be replaced by sorrow or worry or anything but the experience of that perfect happiness. And number three, it should go on increasing forever, which is also not found here in this world or even in the celestial abodes. Think of the best thing you've ever enjoyed in this world. If you could have that thing right now, how long would you be able to enjoy it for? Let's say maybe the best thing in this world for you is someone that you love, and you like looking at that person. Okay, let's say we got that person, and you could look at them. This person that makes you so happy to look at. So what if I put you in a room with that person and had you stare at their face for hours? How long would you continue to receive pleasure from looking at your favorite person? It would not last that long. After hours, you'd be feeling, really, I'm tired of looking at this person's face. Now I want to look at someone else. So where did the pleasure go? You were getting this much pleasure by looking at them, and the more you looked, the less the pleasure became, until it disappeared totally and you really needed a change. Really, I want to look at something else now. Someone may travel all the way to France to go to the Louvre, to look at the Mona Lisa. They think their whole life that, oh, I want to see that painting. So they plan a trip, they go there, they're standing in front of the Mona Lisa. How long will they stand there? 10 minutes? 15 minutes? 30 minutes? An hour? Imagine all that planning, all that effort, all that expense for how long? And the pleasure is fleeting. So this is the nature of all worldly pleasures. Thus we see that worldly pleasure does not qualify as real happiness according to the Vedas. So real happiness is only God. Bhridu one time asked his father, Varun, he said, can you tell me about God? Define or describe God for me. So his father told him, yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhisam vishanti tad brahma vijigyasasva satapo tapyata satapas tapva. Taittiriya Upanishad. He said, God is he from whom everything came, in whom everything is residing, or from whom everything is receiving its life currently, into whom everything returns, that is Brahma, that is God. So, Bhrigu, he told his son, go and do sadhana and see if you can understand more about God. So he went and did tapasya, sadhana. And he came back to his father after some time and he said, Father, I think I have the answer. Annam brahmeti vyajana. Father, God is Anna. Why? Because it fits your definition. You said that from him everything comes, everything is being supported by that, and everything returns into that. So we all come from Anna, means grains like rice. So you eat the food, it's digested by your body, from that your blood is made, from that our reproductive fluids are also made, and from that new life is born. So we come from Anna, we eat all of that Anna in order to maintain our existence, and when we die, what happens? We go back into the earth, and our very body gets absorbed by those plants and becomes Anna for other beings. So, Father, Brahm is Anna. Varun remained quiet, didn't say anything. So his son understood, that's not exactly the right answer. So he went back and did more devotion. This time he came back and said, Prano brahmeti vyajana. Prana. The prana, the life force in our body, that is Brahma. His father said, no. So he went back and did more sadhana. Came back the next time and said, Father, I think I have it. Mano brahmeti vyajana. Man. This man is Brahma. He's getting more and more subtle. From the physical, then he went to the prana, then he went to more subtle, the man, our mind. His father remained quiet. He went back again and did more devotion. This time he came back and said, Vijnanam brahmeti vyajana. Vijnan meaning Atma. The soul is God. His father remained quiet. He went back and did more sadhana. This time when he came back, he said, Anando brahmeti vyajana. Ananda dheva khalvimani bhutani jayante. Anandena jatani jivanti. Anandam prayantyabhisam vishanti. Tad brahma. And that was the correct answer. Father, Brahm is Anand. God is perfect bliss, perfect happiness. That is the definition of God. This is all described in Taittiriya Upanishad, which also states, Raso vaisah rasagvam hyevayam labdhva nandi bhavati. God is Ras, which is another word for Anand, which is another word for perfect happiness. That unlimited, everlasting, ever-increasing happiness, that is God, that is Anand. And a soul can become equally blissful as God if he attains God. So it means a soul can only find perfect happiness by attaining God. So now we come back to our original question. Why is Krishna telling Uddhava that the ultimate goal is to come to him? That's the ultimate goal of every soul. Because every soul wants perfect happiness, and they can only get that by attaining God. Therefore, Krishna is telling Arjuna, he's telling Uddhava in the Bhagavatam, that when I revealed the Vedas, what is told in the Vedas is only how a soul can come to me. Sarve Vedaya Padamamananti. This mantra says that every verse of every Veda is all pointing in the same direction. Every mantra is trying to take us towards God. Vasudeva Para Veda. Veda Vyasji writes in the Bhagavatam that the Vedas are only to take a soul to Krishna. That's it. So, in the Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Uddhava that all the souls are meant to come to me. That is their ultimate goal. But Uddhava had asked, there are so many paths. Which is the right path? So he makes that very simple also.
Bhaktyahamekayagrahyah shraddhayatma priya satam.
He says, bhaktyahamekayagrahyah. Main ek bhakti se hi grahya hu. I am only attainable through bhakti. Is there not any other path? Nope.
Na sadhayati mam yogo na sankhyam dharma uddhava na svadhyayas tapasyago yatha bhaktir mamorjita.
Krishna goes on to say, I am not attainable through any other practice, not through yoga, not through sankhya or jnana, not through yajna, not through karma, not through any other way except bhakti. And in fact, the Vedas say the same very thing. Bhakti revainam nayati, bhakti revainam pashyati, bhakti revainam darshayati, bhakti vashah purusho, bhakti reva bhuyasi.
You want to join with God, you want to meet God, you only have one thing you can do. Bhakti eva means only bhakti. Only through bhakti a soul can meet God. Only through bhakti a soul can see God, have his divine vision. Krishna says the same thing in the Gita.
Bhaktyatmananyaya shakya ahamevam vidhorjuna. Yākum drashtun ca tattvena praveshtun ca parantapa. Whatever a soul wants, to know God, to see God, to enter into God, to receive God's divine love, they must do bhakti. There is no other way.
Nāyam ātmā pravacanena labhyo namedhaya navagnāśutena. Yamevaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vibrinute tanumam svam.
Kathopanishad says, there's no practice through which someone can attain God, only through self-surrender. If someone surrenders to God, then God graces them, God accepts them. Like we were just singing, Mere Nandanandan, Apana banale mohi meri nandanandan. That is bhakti. Please accept me. Please make me your own. That's what this Vaidic mantra is saying. That we can't reach God on our own, but if we surrender, then he accepts us. He makes us his own.
Naham vedayena tapasa nananena nachijaya shakya evam vidho drashtun.
Gita. Again, another verse saying that there's no practice, not through self-study of the Vedas, not through any amount of good action or good karma, not through any amount of austerities, tapasya. The only way is through bhakti. Tulsidas ji describes this very beautifully in the Ramayana when he says,
Sadhak Siddham Vimukta Udasi Kavi Kovida Kritagya Sanyasi Yogi Sura Sutapas Jnani Dharma Nirat Pandit Vigyani Tarahina Vinu Seye Mam Swami Rama Namami Namami Namami.
He says no matter who someone is, and he named many people, Sadha, Siddha, विमुक्त उदासी ज्ञानी योगी धर्मी कर्मी पंडित विज्ञानी all these people, no matter who they are, none of them can reach God without surrender. So surrender means bhakti. Bari mathe baru hoye ghrit sikta te baru tel binu hari bhajan na bhav tariya yah siddhant apel. He makes a challenge, Tulsidas Ji does, that let's say someone could make other impossible things possible, like churning water and getting ghee by churning water, or getting oil out of dry sand. Is it possible? No, it's impossible. But let's say someone could make it possible, even then they could not cross this ocean of Maya without surrendering to God. They cannot become God, realize. That's what it all comes down to. Krishna says in the Gita, Daivi yesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameve prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Hey Arjun, this maya is an endless ocean. It's uncrossable. Maya, God's power. He says, mama maya. That maya is the cosmic power that when Krishna activates it, maya manifests the universe or unfolds into the form of the universe. That maya is a cosmic ocean. It's endless. And a soul needs to cross maya in order to reach God. Tameva viditvati mrityu meti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. Shvetashvatra Upanishad says that in order to reach God, you have to cross something. What is that thing you need to cross? Maya. And how to cross Maya? Not through one's own effort, only through self-surrender. And that self-surrender is another word for bhakti. Just like God has many names, we can call him Anand, we can call him happiness, we can call him peace, we can call him Krishna, Ram. All these names mean the same thing, are the same thing. So you can say also bhakti, you can say surrender, you can say devotion, they all mean the same thing. So only through bhakti can we attain our ultimate goal of God realization. That much Krishna has made clear in the Bhagavatam. Uddhava asked him, out of all of the paths, which one is the right one? So the question is, what do you want? If you want perfect happiness, you must attain God, then there's only one path, the path of bhakti. That leaves the other half of Uddhava's question. Why are there so many other paths? If there's only one goal for any soul, which is to attain God, then why all the other paths? There's a simple answer to this also. Jap tap niyam yog nij dharma shruti sambhav nana shubh karma jnan dayadam tirath majjana jahan lagi dharm kahe shruti sajjan agam nigam puran aneka padhe sune kar phal prabhu eka tav pad pankaj priti nirantar sab sadhan kar yah phal sundar. Ramayana says all those other paths are to induce a person towards the path of bhakti. They are all meant to develop love in the heart or to develop a desire in someone's heart to attain God. Sab karmat khagnayak eha kariya ram pad pankaj neha जहां लगी साधन वेद बखानी सब कर फल हरि भगति भवानी. All of the practices, all of the different sadhanas told in the Vedas, they're all for only one thing, to bring a person towards the path of bhakti. But, Krishna says, people have confused the matter over time.
Yatha prakriti sarvesham chitra vacha sravantihi
bhagavatam. He's explaining further to Buddha that in the Vedas I told only one thing, how a soul can come to me. But there are four kinds of people in the world: tamas, rajas, sattvic, and divine. Divine means a God-realized saint who has crossed Maya with God's grace and now has a divine mind. So let's leave the saints aside for now. In this world, among us ordinary people, there are three types of people: those with tamas pravritti, those with rajas pravritti, and those with sattvic pravritti. In our mind, we have all three gunas, but one is going to be more prominent than the other two. So someone with tamas pravritti, when he reads Vedas, he's going to interpret the meaning of the verses in a tamas way. If a rajas person interprets the same verse, he'll interpret it in a rajas way. And if a sattvic person interprets it, he'll interpret it in a sattvic way, and all three are wrong. Only the saint with a divine mind can give the correct interpretation, because Vedas are themselves divine. Therefore, all the other paths that are described as subsidiary paths to bhakti. Someone may have said, this subsidiary path, no, this is the main thing, because this appeals to my intellect. I like this path, so this is the main thing. And they might take two or three verses from a scripture and take it out of context and say, this is the main thing, this is what you have to do. And someone else is saying, no, this is the main thing. Dharmameke ashashchanye kamam satyam damam shamam anye vadanti swartham va aishwaryam tyaga bhojanam kechid yagya tapodanam vratani niyamanyaman adyanta vanta evaisham loka karmadi nirmita. Dukho darkastamo nishtha chudrananda shucharpita. Bhagavatam. Krishna is telling Uddhava very clearly, he named all the other paths.
Dharma meke yashaschanye.
He says, everybody finds their thing that appeals to their mind, because all of that is in the Vedas. The Vedas are like an unlimited bazaar, a big market with something for everybody. So someone says, doing good actions is the main thing. You have to do good actions. Someone else says, no, try to become famous, because after you die, what will stay behind? Your name. Someone else says, just live for today. Fulfill all your worldly desires, because who knows what will happen after today. Someone else says, telling the truth in every situation, that's the best thing you can do. And on and on and on. Are all these things said in the Vedas? Yes, there are certain things told in the Vedas where if you want to fulfill a certain worldly desire, do this. You should do these kinds of good actions. All of this is told in the Vedas, yes. But none of it is described as being the ultimate thing. It's all subsidiary to the path of bhakti. Because there are all different kinds of people in the world, so everyone is at a different level. Just like in any given town, you have different levels of education available depending on a person's qualification. Someone who hasn't even completed kindergarten will not be given admission into a PhD program. So you have preschools, you have elementary schools, you have middle schools, high schools, post-secondary education, graduate schools, all of this available. That's like our Vedas, a fully coordinated system of education for all the souls of the universe, depending what level of consciousness they are at, how highly evolved spiritually they are. But it is all meant to induce them in the right direction. Let's say someone is thinking, well, I don't want God. I just want to enjoy Swarga. I want to enjoy that amazing pleasure in the celestial abodes. I'm not interested in attaining God. So does that mean, oh, sorry, there's no path for you? No, Veda says, you come also, we have something for you. Here, you do this. Do all these good actions with a desire for Swarga, and you will get Swarga. Will they get to stay in Swarga forever? No. They'll come back here, and they'll again experience the limited nature of worldly existence, of worldly pleasures. See, what happens to a person, though, even if they're doing good actions with worldly desires, if they're following the teachings of the Vedas, they're being induced by that path to develop the discipline and the sattvic quality of their mind. So eventually, what's going to happen? Eventually, that person will also start to desire for God. It's no different than a parent telling his child who is being jiddi and saying, I don't want to go to school. So he says, I'll give you this chocolate. If you go to school and you're a good boy, when you get home, I'll give you this chocolate. So the child goes to school just to get the chocolate. He doesn't realize the benefit he's actually getting by going to school. In a similar way, someone may be trying to follow all the karmakanda of the Vedas, for instance, with the desire of enjoying swarga or enjoying more prosperity in his next birth. He's not thinking about attaining God yet. Inadvertently, he's developing the sattvic quality of his mind, and so eventually, it may take many lifetimes, but eventually he'll start to desire for God. So all of these paths are meant to take a person in that direction. What is the path of yoga? Patanjali introduced the path of yoga for someone who's very physically oriented. That how to bring him towards Krishna. Okay, use the physical postures, control your emotions, control your mind through this Ashtanga yoga. But in the end, what do you have to do? In the end, he also has to surrender to Krishna. The jnani, the yogi, the tapasvi, everybody has to come back to bhakti in the end. So that's why Krishna says there's only one path. I told one path, bhakti, because that's what brings a soul to me. And all the other paths are preliminary, you can say. If someone is not desiring God, then what should they do? If they don't understand the necessity of doing bhakti, then depending on what they are desiring, there's a path for them in the Vedas which is going to indirectly induce them towards the path of bhakti. But if someone takes one of those paths thinking that this is the only ultimate thing, then the Vedas condemn that wrong understanding. Ishta purtam manyamana varishtham nanyacheyo vedayan. Shvetashvatarupanishad says, if someone thinks that just by following the path of karma, doing good actions, but without surrendering to God, in other words, if someone thinks they can attain God without bhakti, just by doing good actions, Ved says a word, pramurha, which means a great fool. That person is a great fool because they will go to swarga on the basis of their good actions, but then they'll get returned here. Hinataram vadishanti. They only stay for a limited period of time in swarga, then they're bound to come back in this world and take birth again maybe even in the lower species, before they get a chance to be born as human again. So if someone thinks the path of karma is going to take them to their ultimate goal, they're mistaken. And that's why he said, adhyantavanta evaisham. All those other paths are taking you somewhere, but they keep you within the realm of Maya. They don't take you beyond Maya, so their phal is adhyantavant. Vant means vala. Adhyantavala. Their phal, what they give you, it has a beginning and an end. So you go to Swarg for a limited time and come back. You follow the path of yoga without doing bhakti, without surrendering to God, you'll get siddhis. And if you use those siddhis, you lose the power. And eventually, yen yeravindaksha vimuktamalinas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya arubhya krichrena param tadam patatat patantyadhona drita yushmadangraya. Then Vyasji says in the Bhagavatam, any jnani or yogi who reaches the topmost stage of that path, which is called Atma-jnana, he's still under Maya. He knows the divinity of his own soul, but he hasn't known God yet. So what if he doesn't surrender to God, even though he's become Atma-jnani? Then Patanti, he falls back into the world. He falls from that high stage he'd attained, because he ignored surrender to Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakanchati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param Bhaktya Mama Bijanati. He says that jnani or yogi, he may be able to purify his mind and attain that state where he has no attachment or worldly desire, and he's at peace with everyone and everything in this world, but until he does my bhakti, until he surrenders to me, he will not know me. Shankaracharya says, Moksha karana samagryam bhakti reva garihasi. Even Shankaracharya says, you cannot receive liberation without doing bhakti. So bhakti is supreme. Are all of those other paths described in the Vedas? Yes. Is yoga described? Yes. Is jnana described? Yes. Karma? Yes. Tap? Yes. Dan, yes, all of that is described, but it's not there to take you to your ultimate goal. The ultimate goal can only be achieved through bhakti. So with this clarity that we've received from Krishna in the Bhagavatam, it becomes very simple. He said, your ultimate goal is to attain God. You can only attain God through bhakti. All the other paths that are described, they're there, but people, according to their own material understanding, they've given undue emphasis on different paths, saying that this is the main thing. And in doing so, they've confused the spiritual philosophy, they've confused the seekers. But if we just go back to the original, what could be more authentic than Krishna himself, the one who revealed the Vedas, the one who is the ultimate goal? He himself clarified everything in one chapter, in the 14th chapter of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And he said that I am only attainable through bhakti, not through any other path. So the soul who wants to attain Krishna, he has to do bhakti. That bhakti must be done with the mind. There are two kinds of bhakti. Sasang bhakti and anasang bhakti. Anasang bhakti means indriyon ki bhakti. And sasang bhakti means man ki bhakti. Think of it like this. Let's say you're on an exercise bike and you're pedaling, thinking that you're going to get to the next town. Let's say you want to ride your bike from here to the next town over. So you sit on your exercise bike and you pedal for 1 hour, thinking that, oh, it's only a couple miles away. Within 1 hour, I should be able to get there. After 1 hour, where are you? In the exact same place. Why? Because the wheel didn't hit the road. There was no contact between the wheel and the road. You're spinning your wheels and not going anywhere. That's indriyon ki bhakti. We can do hours and hours, years and years of anasanga bhakti. Anasanga means without the attachment of our mind. Just physically do bhakti. Doing puja, arti, doing paath, Ramayana paath, Gita paath, Bhagavat saptah. You can do all of that. All of that is indriyon ki bhakti. It's like multiplying by zero. You can do 100 hours of effort and multiply that by zero, the outcome is zero. Do 1 billion hours of effort, multiply by zero, the outcome is zero. Because the wheel didn't hit the road, we're just spinning our wheels. Real bhakti is done from the mind. So that's sa-sanga bhakti. Indriyon saath mein lao, theek hai. It's good. But the mind has to be there, that's number one. So if we're lovingly remembering Krishna and singing his kirtan, it means that's sa-sanga. Lovingly remembering, that's called smaran. Or rup dhyana. That means our mind is attached to Krishna. That's correct. Now the tire's in contact with the road. Now whatever effort we do, we're going to go forward. We're not just spinning our wheels. We're not multiplying by zero. And with our body, we're also doing bhakti. We're singing his name. We're doing arti with our body. That's good as long as our mind is also attached to him during that time. So anasanga bhakti does not purify our mind, because how can a physical action purify us internally? Sasanga bhakti purifies the mind, because this is also from the 14th chapter of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Vishayan dhyayatashchittam vishayeshu vishajyate mamanusmaratashchittam mayyeva praviyate. Krishna tells Uddhava, if you attach your mind in the world through loving remembrance of worldly pleasures, then your mind becomes more impure. And if you attach your mind to me through loving remembrance of me, through longing to meet me, then your mind gets purified and you attain me. So he just described sasang bhakti. Normally we do sasang bhakti of the world, and we do anasang bhakti of God. We get attached in the world, and we just do formalities, physical formalities towards God. So our mind stays attached in the world. One time in Mathura, so happened that a group of people, they had a little bit of bhang one night, and they were on the banks of River Yamuna in Mathura, and they said, Chalo Prayag, let's paddle down the river and go to Prayag and have darshan of Triveni. It was night, they all found a boat on the ghat, and they jumped in and they started paddling. None of them noticed that the boat was still tied to the ghat. So in the morning when it started to get light out, one of them who, you know, thoda sa hosh mein aaya tha, he looked, he said, you know, the bank of Yamuna here in Kashi, it looks almost exactly the same as Mathura. All the buildings are the same. What's going on? Then they said, oh, we are still in Mathura. What happened? Oh, we're still tied to the ghat. So we're doing all the bhakti, visiting all the holy places, doing all that effort, but our mind is attached in the world, so we're not going anywhere. So real bhakti is simply attaching our mind to God. If we do that, however much we lovingly remember him, faithfully long for him, with confidence, like we were singing Mere Nanda Nanda. With how much confidence do we say that word, Mere? Is it just a word to us? Mere, Mere Nanda Nanda, Meri Dadi, Mera Beta, Mere Nanda Nanda. So how much confidence is there that yes, he really is mine? Mere Nanda Nanda. Apna Bana De Moon, Mere Nanda Nanda. That confidence is bhakti. We have to develop that feeling. You see, when someone is yours, then you have confidence. If we really believe that, Krishna, I belong to you, and you are mine, to whatever extent I believe that much confidence I will have that he will make me his own and he will come to me. Developing that confidence is bhakti. And that confidence is simply developed through chintan, through thinking. The more we think of him, the more we long for him, the more our heart purifies, and the more our faith develops. So this is bhakti. The simplest form of bhakti is just longing for him and chanting his name with that longing, with the feeling that we're asking him to come to us. So with this feeling in our hearts now, we'll do a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan before we have the arti. We can all close our eyes and really feel Krishna's presence.